Like to call the meeting of the Senate Special Committee on Trans-Alaska Pipeline System Throughput to order. Let the record reflect that it's 15:35, Tuesday, March 5th, 2013. We're in the Butchovich Room 205. Like the record show, we have quorum to do business. We have Senator McGuire, Senator Gardner, and myself, Co-Chairman Machicki. I also want to notice that Co-Chair Dunleavy and Senator Fairclough are in a held-over finance meeting and are trying to work their way in this direction. Let's see. I'd like to recognize our committee staff, Nancy Jones from Senate Records and Sam Greeley from LIO. Also like to remind everyone to turn off your cell phone. Purpose of our meeting today is to have our second hearing on Senate Bill 59, which is the governor's bill on oil and gas exploration development areas. We have two additional letters of support and one in opposition, which have been sent to your offices and are available for the public on basis. We also have with us today Joe Balash, from the deputy commissioner from DNR. And on the line, we have Wendy Wolf and Ashley Brown, Division of Oil and Gas and Department of Law. Public testimony, we're going to open that for the second time. So public testimony is currently open. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on Senate Bill 59? We have no one in the room. Do we have anyone from any of the LIOs that would like to testify? Okay, the meeting has been adequately noticed, as usual, so we may not at this point have a lot of interest in the bill from the public, but like I said, we have two letters of support, one in opposition. With that, with no one to testify publicly, yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay.
I would like to kind of follow up on one of the letters and have some questions for Mr. Balash when you're ready.
Okay. Let's close public testimony and discuss that. Is that okay, or do you want to leave it open and discuss
that? No, that's fine.
Okay. With no one here to provide testimony, public testimony is closed, and I will bring it back to the committee for questions. Senator Gardner.
Thank you, and I guess Mr. Balash, as a representative from DNR, can probably answer this. And have you had a chance to see the letter from Lisa Weisler?
For the record, my name is Joe Balash from the Department of Natural Resources. I serve as the Deputy Commissioner. And through the Chair, Senator Gardner, yes, I've seen the letter.
Okay, thank you. And she refers to a Supreme Court decision that required DNR to prepare comprehensive best interest findings for each phase of a project. And I believe Lisa is also an attorney, and it's her opinion that this proposal is sort of contrary to the previous court finding. Can you kind of speak to that?
Thank you, through the chair. Senator Gardner, I'll comment briefly and then ask that Wendy Wolf and Ashley Brown, who I believe are online, speak to it in greater detail. But with regard to the additional opportunities for public notice and comment, each of these decisions are themselves to be taken in turn. And so in terms of the decision to first dispose of the land through the leasing process and then to authorize the exploration activity and further then the development activities, what the statutes would then spell out is each of those particular points in the development process itself and decisions that reflect the stipulations and conditions under which those activities could take place in a geographic area. If you think about the sale areas that we have for oil and gas purposes around the state, there are five of them, and then these particular decisions for exploration and development could be made at the same or smaller levels subsequently. So I think I've probably said about as much as I should, and should turn it over to the expertise of Wendy and Ashley.
Okay, thank you. And if I might, Mr. Chair, there's one particular paragraph, I guess, that I'd really like to have comments on. And I don't know, Ashley and Wendy, if you've had a chance to read the letter from Lisa Weisler. She submitted it as public testimony.
I've had the this is Wendy Wolf for the record, and I have had the opportunity to read the letter.
Okay, thank you. If I might, Mr. Chair. So it's the top of the second page. It says, under Senate Bill 59, Alaskans will no longer have the opportunity to comment on proposed plans of operation for specific project activities that may occur in or near their community. They'll be required to comment on oil and gas exploration and development without knowing the when, where, how, or what kind of exploration, development, or production might ultimately occur in a potentially vast sale area from 2 million acres in the Beaufort Sea region to 7.6 million acres in the North Slope foothills. And if she were here today, I guess I'd ask what your response would be to that concern.
Hey, Senator Gardner, through the chair, this is Wendy Wolf. And so the concern being that the public will have to comment before knowing when, where, how, and what kind of exploration might occur.
Thank you. And it could be as much as 10 years in advance or, you know, a very, very large area.
Senator Gardner, through the chair, I'm going to let Ashley address the legal issue she's bringing up, but it's the public is going to have an opportunity to comment about where activities can occur, how they can occur, and what kind of activities they can occur holistically in the geographical area. And so they're looking at it before the project happens, so if a community has concerns that exploration or development is going to occur near their community, they can specifically tell us ahead of time that there are areas they want to have avoided, or there's concerns, or there's certain special stipulations they would like to see. So what it does is it puts the public in the position of being able to help plan and address projects holistically before they occur, rather than having to be reactive after they are coming in with a specific plan. Is that addressing the concern?
Mr. Chair, through the chair, thank you. I understand that and applaud the intention to streamline things and make them well understood. But I guess my concern is, number one, it's hard to galvanize members of the general public to do something and respond to something when they don't really know what it's going to be, and it might not be till years in the future. I mean, that's in my personal experience, it's hard enough to get people to step up even when they care about something. But also, what if there are changes, new technologies? So the plan kind of originally is proposed and goes through, but there's nobody actually there ready to work. And then there's a new kind of technology or something that nobody anticipated that raises concerns that weren't known at the time that the original plan went through.
Senator, through the chair, when we're talking about exploration approvals, those kinds of activities are temporary in nature. When you're talking, and those areas may be broader, when you're talking about development, they are more specific. And when we have a company that comes in, by the time you get to development, they've already discovered a reservoir. They have an idea of the size of the reservoir and what their overall plan will be to develop it. The development decisions are going to be more focused on those kinds of areas. So it will be larger than a lease, but it may encompass a group of leases or it may encompass a unit, and those can be larger. But from a practical perspective, it's not going to encompass millions of acres for the development. And I think the concern I'm hearing is the development and the way the state will approve those. Now, once the decision to allow the development phase to move forward, each individual activity on the ground, plans of operation for implementing that development still need to be approved by the Department of Natural Resources. There's lots of other permits that need to be approved through public processes. There's Fish and Game activities, DEC. So there's a myriad of other permits that an operator will need to get in order to implement their development. And so this is just sort of the first step of moving forward with the development. If there's core permits they need to get, they still have to go through all those processes. This doesn't get rid of any of those public notices and opportunities for people to address specific concerns they may have.
Thank you. So the voice of the public is retained at each of those steps. Is that correct?
Yes, through the chair, this is only addressing the Division of Oil and Gas within the Department of Natural Resources and the requirement to do an exploration phase decision and a development phase decision. And it does not relieve us of our obligation under the oil and gas lease to approve the specific plan of operation that implements their development or their exploration. And those specific plans of operation will continue to have agency review, but not a public review. But anytime the division feels that there's concerns out there that we need to go out to a public review for because it's different, it's out of the norm, it's an area that's particularly sensitive, we, of course, would have the latitude to go out with a public notice. And lots of times during our agency review process, that's when those things are brought to our attention.
Thank you. So if I'm a citizen there and I have a concern, I would rely on the agencies to bring it to the public review phase if they saw a problem. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, the public would have an opportunity to comment at the initial phase when we're doing our phasing decision. And then when it goes out to an agency review, that's generally when we hear about other concerns that the agencies that they manage are familiar with in terms of if there's issues with fish habitat or a stream crossing or those sorts of things. So to answer your question, I think what you're asking is the public would have to rely on the agencies to be doing their jobs. Is that correct?
Yes.
If I may enter into this discussion, I think the question was more like, it's not going to be by chance. It's not going to need to be by the public's notice of something substantially different that the department becomes involved with a reevaluation of the leases. If there's a substantial change in the activity that's different than what was under the lease system, the prior lease system, then it triggers a reevaluation.
If I may, Mr. Chairman and Senator Gardner, what we're talking about generically is the winter exploration activity that takes place on the North Slope and the kind of standard exploration well that has been stood up, drilled, and demobed, I would estimate it probably more than 100 times in the last 25 years. The people who live in the communities most directly affected by this activity are familiar with those impacts, the timing concerns, and frankly, the agencies are pretty well familiar with many of those as well. And yet, we persist in going through the same exercise for each one of these exploration plans and reviews each and every time. Conceptually, this is intended to provide the department with a tool under which we can standardize or generalize the conditions under which that exploration activity can take place in the given area, so that we're not having to spend our internal resources examining the same issues over and over again. With regard to the patterns of use and the seasonal activities that take place on the part of subsistence hunting or gathering or fishing, those are the kinds of things that we hope to draw out in these decisions. We consider those things at the leasing stage already in our BIF. This would provide a way to do that for these subsequent decisions as the process proceeds.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And through the chair, sorry, I'm in conversation mode. I guess I understand that. I appreciate that very much, and I just want to feel confident that while we're smoothing the road and making it easier and more efficient and cost-effective for the department and for the industry, we're not losing a critical piece, an opportunity for the public to make their concerns known down the road. I mean, the initial plan is one thing, but it's really hard. I mean, it's hard for me to know how I'm going to feel about something 10 years from now if there's a big change in an issue I'm concerned about and things can then happen. And I just want to make sure that the public will have an opportunity to be heard and have that be their right and not based on whether somebody in the state decides that this is something they should talk about or not.
Well, and through the chair, Senator Gardner, I think something that would be helpful to identify and point out is that it's not clear that we would make the exploration decision process look exactly like the leasing process, but I think it's useful to look at the area-wide leasing mechanism as a little bit of a template. We will need to develop regs to govern this process for us in the future. But with regard to the area-wide leasing program, we do put together a BIF that applies for 10 years, but we don't just put it on the shelf and leave it alone for 10 years. We do an annual call for new information. We take a look at new developments in the course of technology, new approaches to pursuing the activities in question, any changes in some of the other regulatory actions that have taken place, be it ESA or changes in other regulatory standards. So it's not as though we just set it and forget it for 10 years in that area-wide leasing program. Similarly, we would very likely build in certain kind of features like that as we develop the regs for this process.
Thank you. One last question.
Okay. And it's in. Before you move on to the next question, I mean, I think you have some good questions. I mean, the key to remember here is that it doesn't compromise any of the permitting standards. It just simply allows bulk permitting of geographically similar areas that have the same habitat, same, community impact issues. And it may be on the slope, maybe in Cook Inlet, maybe in Middle Earth, but it just allows them to pool a common area together. But what doesn't change is the 10-year impact. They can permit something today on an individual activity, and it may be 10 years. And many new community members will move into that community and will be surprised by this activity. That part doesn't change with this. It's just that it's a larger pool, that's a larger area that's brought in, but similar, again, in geographic and community impact nature. So you're going to get those folks 10 years later in any permitting activity. Responsible companies will contact the community, and especially when it's been a long period of time from receiving their permit before they get engaged, will hopefully take the time to engage that community and make sure that they educate them on the impacts and what to expect as the actual activities begin.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, and I think that one of the things that will be taken into account in these decisions is the geographic scope, and areas of impact that would be felt. And those things are going to look different on the North Slope than they are going to look in Cook Inlet. They're going to look different onshore versus offshore. So, you know, this is not a cookie-cutter approach. It's going to apply to every well in every area. But where we can find opportunities to broaden the geographic scope of a given decision, we think that that makes sense, not only for us, but for our lessees.
And you had another question, Senator Gardner?
Yeah, I think it's sort of rephrasing the original question. I just want to make sure that we're still there. The legislation amended, and I'm reading again from the same letter, 38.05.035E, with the stated intent of making it clear that no best interest finding is required after the lease disposal, but that public notice and the opportunity to comment shall be provided at each phase of the project. Are we retaining that?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, I'll allow Ashley Brown to correct me if I'm wrong, but the answer is yes, as I understand it.
Turning to our presentation. Ms. Brown? Chair,
this is Ashley Brown, Department of Law, and there's no need to correct.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, if we want to turn back to our presentation, it talked about the phases of development. So, I mean, in my demand that Alaskans and our natural resources are protected, I wouldn't be supporting this if this simply allowed the department to permit the whole world and turn folks loose. I mean, what made me comfortable is the geographic similarities and the type of activities that would normally occur in that area. And it is an efficiency issue. Alaska's permitting system is world-renowned for inefficiency, and I certainly appreciate the efforts to streamline permitting without compromising on protection for people or the environment.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator McGuire, any questions, comments?
I'm comfortable with the bill.
Okay. If there are no other questions, I'm going to take a brief at ease for a moment to make sure I understand the process going forward with my key staff. Okay, we're back. What is the wish of the committee at this point?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move Senate Bill 59. We didn't make any amendments.
Version A, no.
Version A, and no amendments, but with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations out of the Special Committee on Trans-Alaska Pipeline System Throughput and onto the Senate Resources Committee.
Okay. Without objection, we will Senate Bill 59 attached fiscal note will move from TAPS throughput to resources. And if committee members can stick around and sign the sheet here, we will adjourn.